Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jaime.
Jaime.
Thanks, you guys, for having me. Thanks, Trevor, for asking at the last minute. Good old Alcoholics Anonymous. Go to a meeting, get asked to speak. 10 minutes is okay, though. I was actually just coming over here to listen to my friend Eric speak. Eric, who I've known for a good long while, and my date of sobriety is 15 March 1998. There's a couple of guys in the room that I've known and loved for a good long time. They were sober before I got sober, and they used to sit around and talk to me after our cab shifts. And you know, I used to always get I used to levitate to people that were sober because I wanted what sobriety had. You know, my friend Mac likes to say he wanted what sobriety offered, but he didn't want to do the work. You know, he wanted to be drunk doing it, you know, which is kind of off. But, you know, it takes what it takes. I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1989. I was mandated. I had got an Article 15. I got in trouble in the military. And the message of Alcoholics Anonymous was there, but it went over my head. I wasn't ready to receive it, which is okay. I don't necessarily think that the seed was planted because, you know, I just wasn't ready. It was going to be another 9 years before I came in, another 8 years at least. So December 7th, 1997 was when I hit bottom. I'd made many, many promises before, but I never kept them. The definition of an alcoholic is somebody who can't control their drinking. I couldn't control my drinking out of the gate from the first time that I drank. So if anybody's trying to relate here, trying to figure out whether or not they're an alcoholic, well, I blacked out, I passed out, and I got sick all in the span of 100 feet, you know. And that's basically how it was for me the entire time that I drank. And eventually used, you know, they're just, it was always a fine line between sobriety and oblivion. And I could be sitting there talking to you, having a good conversation about whatever. And all of a sudden from one drink to the next, one sip to the next, I'm gone and I'm in a different place. And that's basically what it was. So I used to black out a lot. I blacked out driving a lot, and that wasn't any good. By the time I came in, I was on a good 5-year crystal meth run, and the only time that I would drink would be to basically annihilate myself enough to go to sleep. So I would go days and days and days at a time without, you know, and things were just getting really, they were getting worse, and they were getting exponentially worse. So then when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I walked into my first meeting and I was surprised who was there. You know, yeah, I knew that there were some sober people out there, but I just, you know what? I didn't even realize. And all these people were pretty cool. They were people that I would maybe hang out with, you know, but then soon thereafter, I started to feel uncomfortable because, you know, I put days together. And the thing about early sobriety, the days or maybe the first year, it's the longest year of your life. It's going to go on forever. And, you know, it might even bleed into the second year. And that'll really make you crazy. But that's just my experience. But really, things get better. They get better slowly over time, but it's never on your time. You know, you could sit around and stamp your feet and just wonder why, you know, this guy came in and, you know, he's got a girlfriend, and he's got a job, and, you know, why not me, you know, and why is not a spiritual question, you know? You just got to kind of show up and hold on to your seat and realize that in the book it says your life is going to get better. It says the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead, and that's ongoing. You know, in my mind, I was just telling this story to Eric. After 90 days, 90 meetings in 90 days was the suggestion. My first sponsor, Ed H. A lot of people know Ed H. He's got a couple kids these days. Ed H. was my first sponsor, and he took me to meetings. He would come and he would get me, and he would take me to one, two, sometimes three meetings. There were times when I would sit there and I'd go, does this guy even have a job? You know, but he did. He had a job. We were cab drivers together. I knew that he worked, but, you know, for whatever reason, he wanted to really open up his AA world to me. And that was a beautiful thing. I'm very grateful for that. I do that. When I take people to meetings and they're new, I introduce them to people. Like I said, you know, you get uncomfortable. I got very uncomfortable with all these people that I was meeting. And December 7th, 1997, I came in right at the holidays in San Francisco. And this was when the dry dock was very, very active. You know, the dry dock's like an AA club. So they had like a huge turkey fest down there. And there was all these people with time. And I was so like, you know, like amazed, you know. But then, it, you know, slowly over time, I started to feel uncomfortable. And it was just because I was getting further and further away from the drink. I mean, when I came in, I didn't even consider myself an alcoholic. I was more of an addict. I'm an addict, you know. I'm an addict. And what happened after 90 days is that I drank again. So my date of sobriety is 15 March 1998, without even thinking about it. I mean, it's amazing. I can't even, you know, you don't even think. I was out on a date with this gal that I met in the cab, you know, and I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to get a leg up, you know. I was all happy, you know, like I was all, you know, like I was going to get, you know, that's what my mind was, that's what I wanted more than anything. So she ordered a drink, and I ordered a drink without even thinking about it. I drank the drink. I sat on my original sobriety date for 3 years. Finally, I went to the AA World Convention in 2000 in Minneapolis. Every last person, whether they were young, early sobriety, or, you know, newcomer or young people sharing, or old-timer sharing, they all said the same thing. They said, I'm Joe Blow from Stillwater, Oklahoma, and the last time alcohol hit the back of my throat was such and such date. And I used to get so amazed, you know, on dates. Somebody would say, I got sober in 1964, you know, like I didn't believe them. I didn't believe that anybody would have that much time. But they did. You know, but anyway, everybody did that. So finally, when I got back from that first convention in 2000, I raised my hand to my group and I'm just like, you know what? I drank again. I'm changing my sobriety date. And everybody's like, yay, you know, and I was just, oh, you know, my ego kicks my ass. Well, it used to. It doesn't that much anymore because everybody moved away. But all these guys that I saw came in, they would all raise their hands in December and say, I got sober, or I got, you know, such beers, and I'm all pissed off. Anyway, your ego is not your amigo, you know. Things are going to be a little rough around here, you know. Grin and bear it. Do whatever you have to do. Get into the steps. Try to find God and stay sober. Because nobody is in here by mistake. You know, nobody's in here because they're, you know, looking to, well, maybe you're looking to hook up, but nobody's here to, as a social experiment. We're all here because it's life and death. If I drink again, I'm going to die. Or I'm going to be incarcerated, and that scares the shit out of me. I don't want to try it. So that's why I'm here, and that's why I try to extend what's been given to me. What Ed gave to me, I'm trying to give to you. You know, I don't have time. I'm done. Megan's already given me the hook. You know, if there was a gong up here, she'd be ringing it. Yeah. You know, the unknown comic would be up here too. So I'm just grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to be here with Eric. Thanks. This is Eric. He was sober when I got sober.
I'm Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Eric.
Thanks for asking me to share, Trevor. It's an honor to speak at Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, absolutely. There was a little miscommunication on when I was speaking, and Trevor texted me like at 4 o'clock this afternoon. I actually had other plans. You know, and it would have been real easy for me to say, no, I can't do it. You know, I got other plans. I'm going to a show. You know, I got tickets. But I don't say no to Alcoholics Anonymous, man, because, yeah, I shouldn't be here. I mean, I absolutely shouldn't be here. I mean, Jaime's right. Like, I was here when he got here, but I don't have nearly as much time as he does. You know, I'm coming up on 3 years. I've had more time a couple of times, but I've never had, like, the quality time that I have today. Like, that's absolutely... For sure. Like, mine is a cautionary tale. Like, you know, like, this program works, man. It works for people that come in here and get it the first time. It works for people that don't have a super low bottom. It works for people that, you know, have to come in here 30 times before they get sober, you know. I mean, this program works. But my experience is, for this program to work, like, I have to do this program, you know. And I tried so many times to, like, do things my way, or, you know, like, you know, my little take on the program, or, you know, like, when life gets so good, like, okay, now I can cut back on meetings and doing what I do, and it hasn't worked for me, you know. Like, I'm the kind of alcoholic that has to, my experience, I'm the kind of alcoholic that has to, like, have sponsees, I have to have commitments, I have to go to meetings all the time, you know. And if I don't, then eventually I'm going to get uncomfortable, you know, I'm going to get restless, irritable, and discontent, and then I'm going to start, like, having resentments against the rooms and people in the rooms, and fuck that, and I'm going to get this idea that I don't have to go to meetings anymore, and I'll just keep doing the stuff that I do, you know, and I'll keep being positive, and, you know, and then once you kind of stop going to meetings, it's so easy to, like, convince yourself that you can, like, smoke pot or drink beer or something, at least for me. So, you know, I'm super grateful to be here. I kind of like to start, like, what my life's like today. So, you know, this morning I got up and I do what I do every morning, which is, like, I get up and immediately go sit at my computer desk and do, like, that Upon Awakening thing in the Big Book. I've done it for, like, a couple years now. And it's, like, fucking made such a difference in my life, you know. Like, I kind of map out my day and I say the prayers, you know, ask God to direct my thinking and all that stuff. And look at my 10th step from the night before, kind of my assets and my deficits, and I kind of meditate for about 20 minutes, and I start my day that way, you know what I mean? And it makes a huge difference in my life. And, you know, I went to a meeting at 8 o'clock this morning, too early. That's one of the meetings I go to every week. Friday, I meet with my sponsees and my sponsor. And, you know, this is the structure of my life, man. This is, like, everything else is, you know, gravy. And but the structure of my life is Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, I'm going to say, you know, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. So it's funny. I was going to buy cookies for a meeting last night, and I was coming out of the meeting, or Tuesday night, and I was coming out of the meeting. There was this kid laying on the ground in the parking lot going, "I want candy." And his parents were up over, and he was crying, and there was this whole big scene. And I was like, "Oh my God, you know, that he might be an alcoholic." You know, that's how I was when I was a kid. You know, like, man, I was just a little wild man. You know, like, I mean, I was always in trouble. You know, I was always the kid who was getting in fights at school, you know, like by second grade, I was telling teachers to fuck off, you know, and like just crazy shit, you know, and I didn't come, my family, I was adopted, but my family that raised me wasn't like that. They were professionals. Both my parents had master's degrees, you know, Christian people from Texas, you know, and man, I did not fit in, you know, I just didn't fit in. I just always felt like an alien in that family. But yeah, so, I mean, that was just my life, you know, until I found drugs and alcohol about the same time, about 12. Man, I didn't know that I was looking for anything. But when I found it, I knew I found what I was looking for, man. It was like, you know, I don't know if it was like, you know, I hear people describe it in different ways. For me, it was just like, I just loved the way it made me feel. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, I'll never forget the first time I got drunk, and I'll never forget the first time I got stoned. And it was fucking amazing. And then to top it off, I had all these friends all of a sudden, you know, like all these people that kind of were, well, not all these people at that age, were about four of us, but, you know, later on, all these people. But like, and the other thing was like, I had always been kind of an athlete or, you know, I'd been pretty good at school, but not like the best, none of any of that stuff. And I had a feeling I could be the best at drinking and getting high. You know, like I just had a suspicion that I could like drink. And sure enough, that was the case. Like I could, you know, drink more than anybody else. And like I was the guy that had the bag, you know, always. And, you know, selling dope, you know, in high school, all that stuff, you know. And there were always consequences. My parents were really strict. So, you know, unlike Jaime, the first time I ever went to a meeting was 1984. Like my parents were taking me to AA. And the courts were pushing me into AA when I was still in high school. I wasn't having any of it, you know. I remember reading the steps, and there was all the God, and, you know, I'd listen to people, and I was just like, oh, no, no way, you know. I don't need this, you know. I couldn't imagine a life without drinking and getting loaded. Like, that's all that I lived for, you know. Like, that was what made everything else worthwhile. So yeah, by the time I was I joined the military too. That was my first geographic. I had gotten kicked out of my house finally at like 17. I had already been to, you know, juvie and been made a ward of the state, and my parents had let me come back home when I was 17 to try to go to junior college. And, you know, they were the kind of people that listen in on phone calls, you know, when you're on the phone, and they heard me talking about shooting up coke with another guy, and they kicked me out. And so I was out. So I was 17, and I'm in suburbia in Texas, and I'm homeless. And I'm sleeping on the golf course or in my girlfriend's closet. And I was like, fuck this. And so I just went down and joined the Navy, man. It seemed like, you know, the right thing to do. I just wanted to get out of Dodge, you know. I just wanted to get out of that family. I just wanted to get, you know, that's the other thing about alcoholism. Like, it's always something else that's my problem. You know, it's never me doing this stuff and creating this wreckage. It's always, this is my problem. If I could get away from this situation or that situation, then I'll be okay. So, you know, I joined the military, went overseas, and came very close to creating some international incidents. You know, like seriously, like I was the guy that missed ships movement in Manila, and you know, like ended up in the brig for, I got strung out on heroin for the first time, and ended up in the brig for the last like 6 months of my enlistment. Got out by the hair of my chinny chin chin with, you know, a general under honorable conditions discharge, which is okay, you know, not the best, but it's okay. Thank God, because I have housing today as a direct result of being a veteran. So, you know, that's, you know, it's a blessing. Whatever, my higher power's always kind of been looking out after me. But so by the time I'm 21 years old, I'm basically thrown out of the military, because I would have probably made that a career, because, you know, the military, man, you could drink. You know what I mean? And you could, like, as long as you could keep it semi together, you know, you were all right. You know what I mean? Like, they pretty much encouraged you. So you could show up for muster and do your job. You could get drunk and fight and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, it was like, actually, it was like, and you could spend all your money and still, you know, have food and a place to sleep. You know, it was pretty great. By that time, I'm divorced, because I got married while I was in the military. I had a kid. So I'm out of the military, divorced with a kid at like 21. And, you know, my parents, being the good codependents that they are, you know, they kind of always tried to, for a long time, they tried to, you know, like, you know, okay, I'm going to change, you know, and they're like, oh, thank God he's going to change, you know, so let us help you out, you know. So I think my dad got me a job. My dad worked for NASA. He was like a high up guy at NASA. So he got me a job. I was an electronic technician in the Navy, and he got me a job working at NASA. And, you know, so, I mean, this would happen all the time. Like, my parents would kind of help me out, and I would end up in some decent situation. I would have a good job, and I would have, like, a decent future, you know, and things would be looking up, and I would just, in a series of bad decisions, I would just pull that shit right down on top of my head, you know. And I went through a couple jobs like that, wrecked a couple of cars, I got my driver's license suspended, I got in some legal trouble, I ended up kind of I think I got one other job for that was great. If I would have kept this job, I'd probably be a millionaire today. You know what I mean? It was a really good job, and it was when I took my week vacation because of the way it was set up and the shifts that I worked. I would have had 3 weeks vacation. So I said I had been to San Francisco. That's where I got discharged at Treasure Island, and I had had some. That's where I did my break time too. And I had some. I'll never forget the first time I went to San Francisco. It was like, to me, it was an adult Disneyland. And I mean, you know, the bars were right there in the Tenderloin. They were dark and sleazy, and like you could go to this part of the city and get this drug, and that part of the city and get this drug, and this part of the city and get this other drug. And I was like, it's perfect. You know, like, this is where I want to live. So I was working for this place in Texas, and I decided to take my 3 weeks vacation and drive out to San Francisco. I came out here and I ended up on probation. I never went back. You know, I've basically been here ever since. I went back for a short time, but you know, that's what they say. You come out here on vacation, you end up on probation and in the TL. And that's what happened to me. So, you know, I mean, this is just my life, you know, and I would say, I guess things were still working at this point, you know, as far as I was concerned, you know what I mean? Because like, I mean, as long as I can kind of get it together enough to, you know, I mean, I didn't even mind so much like being homeless. I mean, I followed the Grateful Dead around for a little while, you know, and like, you know, lived in the hate and like ripped tourists off and got strung out on heroin and, you know, drank every day. And, you know, so what? I mean, you know, I'm young. I started having some serious legal consequences about this time. Like I started getting in trouble with the law. San Francisco, started going to programs for the first time. You know, what a great deal that is. You know, you go live on the streets and tear it up for a year or so, and then or 3 months, and you go to a program for 3 months and eat good and get healthy and, you know, come back out and do it all over again, you know. And I did that for a long time. I finally ended up going back to Texas because, again, I was sure. Now San Francisco is the problem. Man, how could anybody get sober in San Francisco? I was like, how could you get your shit together in this town? There's just no fucking way. So, you know, I went back to Texas, kind of when I was in Texas this time. This is the first time I ever, I was waiting tables at a place. I was living somewhere, you know, that like we couldn't keep the electricity on, you know, it was like six people in a one bedroom apartment or something crazy shit. And, you know, I was like kicking a morphine habit or something. I call my parents and I was like, oh, I need, you know, I was asking to help me turn on the, you know, electricity or something. And my dad said, you know, he told me this a million times, but he said, you know, if you didn't do drugs and drink the way you did, you wouldn't have any of these problems. And it's like, for the first time in my life, I heard him, you know, and I was like, you know what, you know, you might be right. So my parents were like, do you want us to help you get into a program? I was like, you know what? I think I just need to go to AA, you know, because I had been to programs and I'd gone to AA and I kind of knew already. The seed had been planted. So what I did was I went to AA. I got a sponsor. I didn't do anything, but I got a sponsor. And, you know, for about 6 months, I went to meetings. And, oh, my God, in 6 months, like, my life was better than it had been in, like, 10 years. Like, I got, you know, my license had been suspended for all these years. I got my license back. I paid a judgment that I had against me. I had another good job I hadn't had in a long time. I mean, in 6 months of just abstinence, my life fucking got great, you know, like had a girlfriend, you know, all that stuff. And, but I didn't do anything, you know, I didn't work any steps, nothing like that. So, you know, eventually I got bored. Because, you know, your life, you know, sure, it's exciting. Your life gets good. You know, wow, you know, I'm getting this new stuff. My life's getting good again. It's exciting. But then at some point it plateaus out, you know, and then you're like, okay, well, is this all there is, you know? And so I decided I want to start playing music and these guys start smoking weed. And, you know, before I knew it, I got in another wreck without insurance. I pulled my license again. And I said, I'm going back to San Francisco because I can't live without a license, you know. So drove my truck out here. I was going to be a rock star. I had all my musical equipment in the back. I even brought a guy with me, and we drove out here, and the whole way, it's like, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and he's like, sounds great, you know, I was in a band with him and everything, I had him all buying into this, and the minute we got here, man, I pulled right off the freeway, and went straight to the Mission, and scored a bunch of dope, and was sitting in the cab of the truck with this guy, trying to hit a vein, and I had blood running down all my arms, and you know, I was just getting psychotic about it, and I looked over, and he was looking at me like, oh, my God, who the fuck did I just come out here with? You know, like, it was like, joke's on you, dude, you know, because, yeah, within a couple of days, like, I had pawned everything I had, sold my truck, and I was right back on the streets, you know, and I just deserted this dude. Didn't see him again for, like, 10 years. And, yeah, so So I've been here ever since. This was like in 96 or something, and started having serious consequences. Started going to jail all the time. Got serious cases, you know. I'm pretty much either homeless, in jail, on the streets, or in a program. You know, that's my life. And, you know, but I can't get, you know, I just don't get it, man. You have to come in here and do the things that you guys do. God, I must have gone to 1,000 meetings. You know, I mean, I went to all kinds of meetings, and I sat around, and I guess I just thought, if you go to meetings and you sit around, you're going to get sober and life's going to be good. Because it kind of would work like that for a minute, you know. But inevitably, you know, I would do the same thing and end up in the same place. So finally, you know, I got sober for real. Like I went through I've been to every program in the city, every program except for Delancey Street. So I went through a program. I went to Redwood Center, and then I went to Harbor Lights, and then I went to a meeting, and I got a sponsor, for real. And I decided to work the steps, you know. And so I went through the steps with this guy in a real academic fashion. I mean, we worked all the steps. You know, he told me to do this. I did it. You know, and again, you know, my life changed, you know. And in like a year, I had like the best job I'd ever had in my life. I had resolved all my legal stuff. You know, I'm living in an apartment for the first time in San Francisco. I actually have a place to live that's not, you know, like a program or a jail cell or a street corner. And yeah, you know, but I didn't. Man, I'm just one of these people that I'm just a knucklehead. It took me a long time to figure out what you got to do when you're stay sober. So again, you know, I made some mistakes, and I just. Whatever, I ended up going out. You know what I mean, and so few more programs, and then I came in, and man, I was just beaten into a state of reasonableness like never before. Got a sponsor, did what we do in here enough to like have for the first time ever have the obsession removed from me. Like I'll never forget it. Like I did, you know, fourth and fifth step, and you know. Looked at my character defects and did the whole, you know, hour afterwards and, you know, told this person all my deep, dark secrets. And, you know, at some point I was walking through the city listening to my Walkman or something, and I realized that I didn't want to drink or get loaded. And, like, I had never happened to me before in my life. Like, I was always fighting that, you know. Even when I was sober, even if it was not that bad, I was always fighting that desire. It would always come up, and it would come up as an obsession, not just a thought. So, you know, I was amazed, man. My obsession to drink and use had been lifted from me. So, you know, I continued to go to meetings, and I continued to, you know, all my friends were sober. You know, I did sober things. You know, I had commitments sometimes at meetings, but I didn't sponsor guys. I wasn't really truly of service, you know, and I just kind of treat AA to me, even though the obsession had been removed and I was kind of doing what we do in here, it became just another way of being selfish. You know, it was like, okay, now I'm sober. Now what can I get out of life? You know what I mean? Like now this really has worked. Now, you know, like I got to catch up for lost time. You know what I mean? I got to, you know, get the girlfriend and the car and the apartment and the good job, you know, or I got to go back to school, or it was always something. This other thing is going to make me happy. You know, I knew I had to, you know, go to meetings and all that stuff and stay sober on some level, but I wanted these outside things that was what was going to make me feel better. That was what was going to, you know, that was the end result. So I stayed sober for 5 years, you know, just doing that, you know, after going through the steps a couple times by just going to meetings, you know, and probably, you know, and I probably would have told you up until the time that I relapsed that, like, I worked a program, you know, like I would have told you that I was working a program because, like I said, all my friends were sober. I went to meetings, you know, all the time. I had worked the steps. I could talk the lingo, you know, I could quote the book, you know, all that stuff. But what happened was, you know, I was taking all these psychology classes. I was back in school and I was taking, you know, and I was starting to think, well, maybe, you know, it's, it's a trick we can play on ourselves, you know, after we've been around here for a minute. It's like, oh, well, maybe I wasn't really an alcoholic. Maybe I wasn't really a drug addict. Maybe I just had a fucked up childhood. And because I was adopted and, you know, like I have, you know, I was reading all this like kinds of different therapy you could do to address these issues, you know, and I thought, oh, you know, I thought, maybe I needed this, you know, to get sober. But now that I've been sober for a few years, you know what I mean? And I'm kind of doing also, I'm meditating, I'm going to the gym, I got a good job. I really felt like I had a distance from getting loaded, you know? So I decided I was going to smoke weed. You know, I was going to do an experiment. I was going to make a conscious decision to walk away from AA because I didn't need you guys. And I was going to smoke weed. And if I started drinking every day or if I started doing hard drugs or something, then I was going to like admit I was wrong and walk back in with my tail between my legs and raise my hand as a newcomer and do 90 and 90 and everything was going to be fine. And it just didn't work that way. So I got to experience depths of fucking misery like that I had never experienced before. Like, so I've basically been in and out since then for like the last 10 years. Until I got this 3 years. I mean, there were times I would get a couple years of like abstinence or whatever, but you know, I went to prison for the first time, like in my late 30s, early 40s, got to navigate that world. I had learned stuff in AA that I didn't realize I had learned. I had heard all these stories, you know, I'd heard about going to doctors and getting scripts for things and, you know, stuff I had never done. And so it was amazing, like the things you kind of pick up. And so, boy. I dug quite a hole for myself. You know, I got out. I got on a methadone. I was on 180 milligrams of methadone. I had these doctors that had prescribed me benzos. Like I was, you know, I found a doctor that would give me all these benzos. You know, I drank every day. I got on Social Security, you know, where I didn't have to work and found a place where I could live where they'd take 30% of my income. And so, you know, people would reach out to me from time to time that had known me when I was sober. And it was like, are you fucking kidding me? How could I possibly get from where I'm at to sober? You know what I mean? It's like you don't just walk away from 180 milligrams of methadone, you know? And what my life looked like at that time was like, you know, I would go to the methadone clinic in the morning. I'd get my methadone. I'd have these pills. You know, I drank every day. I would get my Social Security check and I would buy as much crystal meth as I could buy because I'd had this idea that I was going to sell it and make my money last. But of course, I'd be broke by the 12th, no later than the 12th ever. And I would be, you know, like have done so much speed that I'd be in a complete psychosis for like 2 weeks after that. You know, like, I mean, I was really, really like a dismal place, you know what I mean, to be. And that's when I wasn't locked up, you know, or whatever. So at the end of that, I wasn't even committing any more crimes because I was so scared for them to take away all these meds that I had been on. And like, you know, the thing about like having some time in these rooms and working a program and kind of realizing the fate, you know, the true nature of this disease and like the malady, and like you can't lie to yourself anymore. Like when you're out there and it's like that, like there's just no, like before, like it was always like, oh, well, maybe I'll get it, you know, I'll get it together somewhere down the line, you know, like I'll get sober, I'll turn this around, you know, like all that. Like, I didn't have those thoughts anymore. Like, I was very clear. I was going on to the bitter end, blotting out the consequences of my intolerable situation as best I could until I was going to die a fucking terrible alcoholic death or get stabbed in prison or whatever. You know, that was what the life that I was living. And, like, I accepted it because I didn't know how to get out of that. So what happened was I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know. Like I said, I wasn't committing crimes anymore. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Caught a serious case that I was guilty of. I have a record already. So, you know, they were trying to give me 15 years. And so I went to jail. And I had to sit in county jail for like 2 years to fight this case. I was separated from most of the chemicals, you know, that besides the methadone. And I was detoxed quite a bit down off of that. So I was separated from most everything while I was in county jail. You know, like I said, I was guilty. If I got what I deserved, I'd be in prison right now. And I'd be looking at a lot. I'd be looking at getting out when I was in my 60s. Or I'd be dead, you know, for sure. I'm very clear on that, too. So, you know, but like I said, I totally believe, too, that there's a certain amount of grace that is attributed to being able to have the privilege of being a person that's sober. And I totally believe that I'm supposed to be sober for a reason, and that that reason is because I'm supposed to help other suffering addicts and alcoholics. Like I said, that's the cornerstone of my life today. I can't think of any other reason that, you know, God brought me through all this, you know, this life that I've led. So for whatever reason, witnesses disappeared and things happened. And then all of a sudden, after 2 years, it became possible that I was going to be able to get out and go to a program. And so, you know, I was still on some methadone in jail, but I knew that I wasn't going to ever have a better chance than I had right then at that moment. So I was like, you know what, God, I made a deal with God. I was like, you know what, if I'm able to actually pull this off and go to a program, man, I'm going to, from the time I get out, I'm just going to do things absolutely like I've never done them before. And so from the minute I got out and went to this program, like, I just continued till I was completely off the methadone. That's why I only have, like, coming up on 3 years. I've actually been on this journey a little bit longer than that. It just took me a while to get completely sober. But yeah, I got a sponsor right away. You know, I started working the steps. I humbled myself like I had never humbled myself before. I mean, like, coming here, like, I don't know shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I have some experience in this, but I don't know shit. You know, like, always before, it's like, you know, I never really liked a sponsor telling me what to do, or like anybody kind of like, you know, it was always like, oh, I know better. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'll listen to you, but like, I'll figure it out myself. You know, I'll give my drinking and my drugs to God, but I'm keeping everything else. You know, I'm keeping relationships, I'm keeping jobs, I'm keeping, you know, all that stuff. And so this time, like, I just, you know, I gave it all up, and I was just like, you know what? Every day, man, I just tried to do the next right thing and put this first and kind of let my life just unfold in front of me like I had never done before. And that's kind of what happened, you know. Like, amazing miracles have taken place in my life since I've been doing that. Like, you know, one thing was, you know, I ended up getting this housing for veterans in the Presidio. Like, what a great place to live. My rent's like $392 a month, man. Like, I mean, how does that happen? You know, and that's not something I tried to do. You know, there were guys in this program with me that were frantically trying to find places to live. And I was like, you know what? It's all going to work out. You know, I just need to keep going to meetings, and like, something's going to work out. And like, that has absolutely been what has happened as long as I continue to like live that way. You know, always before, when I would be sober, like, most of the time I would end up working. I do construction accounting, you know, like, I would end up working for this one friend of mine who I got sober with him. Like, he's got like 17 years now. And he owns a construction company, and like, thank God for this dude, because every time I get sober, like, he'd hook me up and like, I'd have a job, you know, or whatever. But I was fucking miserable working for this guy, man. Like, I'd always have this life when I was sober where I would like wake up in the morning, even when I'm sober, and be like, ugh, another fucking day. Like, you know, I got to go to that job, or I'd end up, or I got married one time to this girl. I'm like, oh God, I'm married to this lady. You know, it was always some, you know, thing that I had done that, like, I felt like I painted myself into a corner, you know, like, you know, because I would make these decisions, you know. And so, like, yeah, I mean, the difference this time has been like, really, I have just put AA and like all this stuff first. And like, man, I have the most amazing life today. Like, I'm in school, I'm going to San Francisco State, like, I'm finishing up my junior year, and I'm majoring in 10 minutes. I don't know if I can go on that long. No, I'm majoring in philosophy, you know, and like, you know, yeah, well, so what? I'm like a 48-year-old junior. Like, who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? Like, I'm the oldest guy. I don't care. You know, like, I wake up every day and I'm stoked. You know what I mean? Like, I love my life. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to go to some job I hate. You know, I mean, it'd be nice to be in a relationship maybe someday, but who cares? You know what I mean? Like, whatever. I'm single. I've got this killer housing. I live in the Presidio. I go to school. Like, literally, I wake up every day like, man, life is all right, you know. And like, I have never done that, even when I was sober, you know, even having those 5 years. And it was always like this underlying restless irritability, because, like I said, I would give certain things over to my higher power, but I fuck that. I'm keeping that, you know. You know, I don't do things that bring me, you know, that I feel like it's me taking the reins, like trying to to, you know, I honestly believe that if I put this stuff first and put one foot in front of the next, and my number one priority is to, like, to be of service and to go to meetings and to do what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, that, you know what, my life's going to work out. My life's going to work out better than I ever could have planned it myself. And I absolutely believe that. And, like, you know, I've had the privilege of taking guys through the steps, you know, like, I had never done that. It's funny, I used to listen to people in meetings say stuff like, oh, you know, I love sponsoring people, it's like the bright spot of my life. And I'd be like, yeah, right, whatever, you know, okay, I get it, you gotta say that, you know what I mean? But, like, because I had actually, like, begrudgingly sponsored a couple of guys when I had that 5 years, somebody would ask me, I'd be like, oh, okay, sure, you know, and I'd go read the book with them, but I'd be like, oh, I wish I didn't have to do that, you know, whatever, you know? But you know what, like, with the change of attitude and, like, the way my life has just happened since I've been back, like, yeah, man, what a fucking amazing experience, man, like, to take guys through the steps, to listen to another person's fifth step, you know what I mean? To, like, to be able to, I have two H&I commitments. One of them is I go to 111 Taylor once a month where all the parolees are, you know what I mean? And, like, man, you know, you got guys like, man, and I so many times in prison, like, I run into a guy that, you know, made one bad decision, man. You know, I swear to God, 80% of the people in there are just like us. You know what I mean? They're just drug addicts and alcoholics. There's not a whole lot of criminals, just criminals. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's some, you know, whatever, on death row and shit. But in the general population of prison, it's mostly guys just like us that are drug addicts and alcoholics. And they've all had some, you know, most of them have had some experience in recovery or programs, you know, and it's like, you know, why me? Why do I get the opportunity to be? A lot of times, you know, we have a skewed perception in AA that, like, I used to see people come in, you know, and relapse and come back in. I'd be like, what an idiot. Like, why didn't he just do the steps, you know, like I do, you know, or whatever. Like, what a crazy egotistical thing to think, you know what I mean? Like, because we're the lucky few, man. The vast majority of people out there don't even get an opportunity to have this kind of life. You know what I mean? And, yeah, you know, so, yeah, like, sponsoring guys, taking guys, doing my H&I commitments, you know, being able to go back to school and kind of have some goals, you know, that I'm working toward, you know? And the thing about it is like, I'm open to God changing my plans, you know, like God speaks to me through the universe and through other people. Like, and if all of a sudden it's really clear to me when I'm in God's will and when I'm in my will and when I'm in God's will, everything is fucking easy, man. You know what I mean? As long as I just accept how life is at that moment and go with it, it's very clear to me whether I'm acting out of self-interest. You know what I mean? So, like, if all of a sudden I started to get all these messages that, like, I needed to quit, you know, it wasn't working out with school anymore and I needed to just go back to work, I'd be willing to do that, you know what I mean? Because all that shit is secondary. You know, the thing about it is like, this is all that really matters, because without this, like, I guarantee you, if I relapse again, I will spend the rest of my life in prison or I'll probably be dead, which would actually be better. You know, I prefer that, you know what I mean? Than a life of, like, you know, just like homelessness and incarceration, you know, give me a swift death. But, you know, that doesn't happen for me. I get to, like, sleep on the concrete in the rain. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, and waddle over to the methadone clinic every morning at 6 o'clock to get my, you know, methadone. Yeah, that's what I get. You know what I mean? So, like, I am super grateful to be sober. And I'm super clear that, like, my primary purpose is to help other addicts and alcoholics. And that if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not be here. I've tried every possible way to not have to do this. I've tried every possible way to just, like, get my life together without having to get sober. You know what I mean? Or to get sober on my terms, you know, and just not have to do this stuff. And, you know, it doesn't fucking work. And the ironic thing about it is that now that I'm actually doing this stuff and, like, all in, like, I was here when Jaime got here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just kicked myself in the ass. Like, what would my life be like today if I would have realized that, you know, 20 fucking years ago. But it takes what it takes. And I'm real clear on that, too. And, like, I wouldn't wish my path on anybody because it's been fucking miserable. But I would not trade my situation for anybody else's today because the quality of life I have today is absolutely, like, worth everything I've gone through. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I got four more minutes. I'm super grateful to be here. Like, it's nice. Like, it's nice. It's nice to come back to Oakland because I lived here for a few years. Like, and I went to, you know, I went to meetings. I was, when I was married, I lived here and I kind of would go to meetings and, you know, like I did, I liked recovery over here. You know what I mean? I liked the East Bay. And so when I was asked to speak over here, I was like, oh yeah, that'd be killer. I'd love to come back. I know a lot of people. I recognize C. Giles. I recognize people that from San Francisco. Yeah, you know, like, for the newcomers, like, this works. You know what I mean? Like, save yourself the fucking trouble of, like, you know, beating your head against a wall. Because another thing is that, you know, what they say, that every time you go out, it gets worse. That's absolutely fucking true. That's been my experience. Every time I go out, don't ever say it can't get worse. Because you're tempting fake. Trust me, it can get worse. You know what I mean? Every time it has gotten fucking worse. And, like, I just want to keep it so real because, you know, I know what it's like to sit out on a street corner in the freezing cold in the middle of the fucking night and just sob because my fucking life is just like that. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, yeah, I'm just, that's all I got, man. All right.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.